Joe Rogan Podcast. Check it out.
The Joe Rogan Experience.
Train by day, Joe Rogan Podcast by night, all day. And we're live in paradise, ladies and gentlemen. To my left, powerful Ben O'Brien. Lad, how are you?
Wonderful top of the morning to you.
To his left, powerful Sam Soholt, the maker of the great bus, the hunting bus.
Jesus.
To his left, powerful John Dudley, archer extraordinaire and teacher of many great people. And to his left, big wave surfer, Shane Dorian.
We're all here in Lanai. We've been on this epic bow hunting trip, and we figured we'd grace you fine folks with a podcast. We've had a couple of beverages. We're out here enjoying the beach and having a great fucking time. Boys?
Amazing time. Paradise. Can't say enough about it.
What do you do? Are you Instagram storying this?
Yeah, right. Of course.
John Dudley is Insta storying this. We're going to do what's called a swap cast. So this will be available on my podcast, and John will get a copy of it too. So it'll be on Knock On, which is the premier archery podcast. If you're not listening, you're probably not really slinging arrows, are you?
Well, they'll sling it.
Just not doing them correctly.
Actually, I had a guy. He tagged me, you, and Cam in this picture, and he had eBayed a Hoyt. And I don't know if you saw that picture, but he tagged us both, and he was holding up this bow, and he said, it's about ready to get effing serious. And this guy had never shot.
But, and he finally got one off of eBay.
The JRE listeners, they are getting into some bows. So eBay bow prices are going up. Neighbors' insurance policies are also going up.
there's a lot of dogs that are hiding under the porch.
Yeah.
Based on this hunt, arrow prices, broadhead prices, archery prices are all going up.
So let's explain this place, because this place is Shane. You talked about it on my podcast, and it is maybe the epic bow hunting destination on the planet Earth.
The cat's going to be out of the bag after everybody hears this, huh?
That's the problem, right? Yeah. We should shut up. We should say, listen, whatever you do, don't go to Lanai. Because it sucks. People are not friendly. The weather sucks. It's ugly to look at.
There's no deer.
There's zero deer. Yeah.
They ran out of beer like 2 days ago.
They ran out of beer.
Tequila's gone.
And the tequila only comes in once a month. Yep. And they bring it in a rowboat.
And it's just in shooter sizes.
Yeah, and an angry sailor. Drops it off at the beach. You have to go get it. Yeah, it is like one of those tricky things where it's like you have to like think, how much do I really want to talk about this?
Well, if you're a hunter, you appreciate it. If you're not a hunter, you're thinking, what the hell? If it's cool, talk about it. But it's, you know, when I flew in, I actually asked a guy on the plane, I said, is there any cool places to like try to surf? I said, because I'm actually wanting to get some lessons on how to surf. And the guy said, well, I don't know if you're going to have anyone good to teach you on this island. I said, well, I've got a pretty good guy coming in. And he said, well, if there are good waves, no one here would actually tell you where they are.
Ooh.
So it's relevant to what we're doing, right?
Yes.
I mean, if you have a good thing...
That's the problem,
you
right?
Almost, you want to tell everyone how cool it was. This is him, dude.
What's that guy's name? Shout out his name. What does it say?
Your friend Gavin.
Shit, your friend
just
Gavin.
Got manly as fuck. Hashtag archery. Hashtag.
That's hilarious. Good for him.
Yeah,
your friend Gavin. Just the guy with the bow.
Yeah. Check him out.
Your friend Gavin,
100% enthusiasm right there.
Your friend Gavin just gave you a big shout out, bro. Thanks for getting into archery.
That's legit.
Don't shoot your neighbor or his dog.
Yeah, definitely go to a safe area. Yeah. Well, that's really a problem. There's not enough safe areas. I mean, you would think that LA, with a place that has 20 million plus people plus Mexicans, I think there's it's the numbers. Like, how many humans? There should be more archery spots. There's a few spots. There's like maybe in the entire Los Angeles metropolitan area, there's might be four or five. Impact Archery is a big spot. You go down there, right? That's San Diego.
I go to
Bob Prom.
Yeah, there's one called Performance Archery.
Oh, Performance. Where's Impact?
No, really good.
What's Impact Archery?
Impact is crap. I forgot his name. He's mad. One's Bob.
Is that Vegas?
Yeah, that's Bomb Prob.
Oh,
Bomb
Impact Prom is in
his performance.
Is that the Vegas spot?
This is a terrible time to like really pin me down on.
I would Google it, but we're recording this podcast through my phone. I think that's the place we go to in Vegas. I'm pretty sure it is.
I don't
in
know.
Fact.
I mean, feel free to Google it.
Impact Archery in Vegas.
I live in Austin, Texas. We got one bow shop that's worth anything.
Yeah, I think you have a new place, though, right? Isn't
Archery
there
Country.
A spot?
Archery Country. It's been around for a while, but it's under new ownership, and it's pretty crazy. Pretty good. But, I mean, there's millions of
people. Do you not have the Google app here? I'm looking at your phone. I'm so confused because I'm used to my phone.
You just go to Safari and type on the top.
What is this mess? Well, okay. Impact Archery.
Anyway. For those of you listening, we're actually in Joe Rogan's room.
Yeah, it's
looking out. There's a pair of binoculars here.
They suck.
Which actually suck.
Yep.
But we're looking. If we look across that way, like 2,000 miles. How many miles is
6,000 miles.
6,000 miles to Tokyo?
As told us, yeah.
6,000. I'm so glad we have Shane Dorian in here because he's got the true logistics. Last night we had an amazing beach cookout. I can't say enough about that.
We probably should tell, without really giving a whole bunch of eye details, how this became a thing. Like how the hunt became, the conversation began.
Let me just, I'm going to play this because.
Let's set the stage.
So here, I'm going to go way back, way before this, what you're about to hear. And we apologize for what you're about to hear. Shane and I hunted together in New Zealand last year.
Yeah.
Around this time. And as we're tooling around New Zealand hunting. He mentions, like, when we're talking about Hawaii, we're talking about elk hunting, we're just kind of covering all the best spots in the world. And he said something to me like, Lanai is the best deer hunting you'll ever find. Like, bar none. There's nothing different.
And you're like, bullshit.
And I was, bullshit. I'm going to check it out. I'm checking it out. And then you said the same thing on Joe's podcast. And Dudley heard the same thing. So Dudley and Joe and I were having a nice dinner in Vegas.
Yeah.
A lovely dinner.
Lovely dinner.
With Joe's friend Andy Stump. Shout out to Andy for crashing our dinner in the most epic way possible. So we're having dinner. Andy orders about, I want to say half a dozen tequila shots. We get a little bit excited. And then he orders a half dozen more tequila shots. And then he finishes her off with six more tequila shots.
So at that point, we came up with this. This was actually our FaceTime to Shane Dorian.
But we wanted to send, we really
he wouldn't like answer, so we actually recorded
we
this.
We wanted to send a message.
So here was the message to Shane Dorian.
Listening to that while fairly sober, it's amazing how slow my voice was. I was clearly, like, if I was talking to a cop, if I was a cop, he'd throw me right in jail.
You were wrestling those syllables like they're crocodiles.
Crocodiles are too grippy. It would be more like some sort of a slimy eel.
I had this, someone sent me this message on my phone years ago. It was a cartoon. They redid the original, remember the Rudolph cartoon? Or the original Rudolph thing that everyone wanted to watch on the night before Christmas?
The Claymation one?
Yeah.
Where's the bottle opener?
Jeez, you're so stressed out.
Just looking for the bottle opener.
It was a clay animation of that Santa Claus being pulled over for drunk driving, but he had a bunch of coke in his sleigh. Have you guys ever seen it?
No.
He's like, what's wrong, Othifer? It was hilarious, but that's pretty much how this whole hunt started. Was a very...
Well, we're in Vegas for SHOT Show, and one of the cool things about SHOT Show is you get down there and there's a bunch of other people that are into hunting, and everybody starts talking. You're like, man, we got to do something. We got to figure out a hunt. And look, this is, we got one more day tomorrow morning. This couldn't be, or you guys are going to hunt this afternoon. I can't because I'm here with the family and I have multiple obligations. But next time I might have to leave them behind. I didn't say that, Jessica, if you're listening to this. I think that this is like one of the coolest places on earth where you could bow hunt. It really is.
It's a classic picture.
It's hard to beat it. It really is. I mean, you can just empty your quiver in an hour. Or me. It's epic, right? Tons of deer, lots of action, perfect bow hunting terrain.
Yeah, in all seriousness, once you're here, you feel like, man, this is an important place. Like this, these kind of places are important for hunting.
Yeah, there's just not a whole lot of spots like this on the planet that are like pristine. I mean, it's hard to get here. That's one of the beautiful things about it. It's like it's easy to get to Honolulu. It's a little more difficult to get to Maui. It's way more difficult to get here, you know? Yeah. And that's what keeps people from coming, I guess. Because
there's such a cool story, though, to the island.
Yeah. I mean,
the island was originally, you know, really the revenue came from pineapples, and it was a pineapple plantation.
Yeah.
And when we're, like, my knuckles are bloody. I don't know if your guys' are from crawling around. My knees and my knuckles are bloody, but everywhere you go, there's, like, little 1-inch wide plastic pipe on the ground, and that was all the irrigation, all the irrigation for the pineapples. And he told us today that they actually they buried that plastic, a lot of the black plastic that you see where they've now ground it up because they took the pineapples out. He said the plastic was 7 feet under the top of the soil so that the moisture stayed between the top of the soil and the plastic so that the pineapples would actually grow.
That's interesting because everywhere you walk, you do see that black plastic kind of popping up.
He said they've tried to get rid of it, but he said it was 7 feet under the topsoil.
Pineapple Isles.
Pineapple Island is what, you know, the reference is for the island. But Axis Meat historically has been argued as the most pure, tasteful meat on the planet.
It's so delicious. Just what they serve at the hotel, Axis Meat sliders. Oh,
it's pretty cool insane. Because here at the hotel, when they say venison burgers, back in the States, when they say venison, we're thinking whitetail. Mm-hmm. But here when they say venison, it specifically is Axis that's native to the island, and everything that they're serving here at the hotel is Axis.
Yeah. But let's talk about that real quick, because when you get venison in America, you're mostly getting it from New Zealand. You're getting venison that is commercially raised. A tremendous amount of elk and venison that you buy in America comes from New Zealand.
Do they classify elk as a venison too?
Yeah, they do sometimes.
Venison,
yeah.
Red deer is venison. All deer.
I didn't know that.
But
elk is deer.
When I went to a restaurant, restaurant that's near my house, and this guy, it's a really nice restaurant, and they're like, we have elk from New Zealand. Like, they're making it like it's a big deal. I'm like, ugh. You brought it all the way over there. Poor elk and some high fence bullshit operation. Okay. Congratulations.
Stacey, yeah, this elk tastes like sadness.
You bring it over a slave that you shot in the head.
No, I mean, there's the red deer and the stag. It's not elk in New Zealand. It's red deer.
Yeah.
And they're farmed over there like cattle. And they're shipped not only to the States, less to the States and more to Europe and Germany, places like that.
Well, one thing that that place has in common with this place is no predators. New Zealand and Lanai, it's a very strange situation where they brought over these animals that are not native.
Yeah.
Whether it's in New Zealand, there's the stag, and then there's red deer, and a few other different... Do they have pigs in New Zealand?
No. Yeah,
well, they do.
They do now. Yeah,
mm-hmm. Pigs. Yeah,
all those animals are invasive, so they go crazy and they have to, you know, well, they have to control their populations.
When I was down there, we were talking about the difference between the States and here, and they were talking about their need to, you know, the outfitter community there wants to make money, of course, but they also want to conserve and protect that population and wildlife. Their problem is the population on that island doesn't value the wildlife. They see them all as feral. I mean, they see chamois and they see tar, Himalayan tar, and they see red stags as a feral population or a non-native mammal that they shoot at wholesale.
Yeah.
And they jump in a helicopter and they fly around and they shoot these animals. And what these guys are saying is, at this point, they might as well be indigenous. I mean, these are the animals that we have here. We need to protect them and treat them like a resource and value them, which gives them a better chance to live on.
Well, the tourism in New Zealand, how much of it is based on hunting? It's got to be quite a chunk of it.
Good chunk of it. But what they've done over there, I think, not to put a negative spin on it, but they take a lot of our American sensibilities, because I think most clients that go over there, some European, but the bulk of them are American, they've taken our American sensibilities and they've kind of turned it against us a little bit. There's a lot of high fence red stag. There's a lot of like, come down here and shoot this $20,000 animal, which is, you know, akin to throwing back to our trophy hunting. But there also is a lot of public land and there's a lot of awesome places to hunt, which I think more folks are starting to find out.
There's a lot of both. That's just kind of like the dirty little secret of there is. There's a lot of high fence, like every single one of those really big red stags that everybody sees and went, wow, look at that New Zealand stag.
It's the same thing in South Africa.
They're all on farms. They're all like born
not to,
raised,
you know,
and bred.
Not to say that's completely a negative thing, but like.
But it's weird.
It's weird. It's a different mentality. And it's also, at the same time, you're looking at an island that has so much diverse public lands. I mean, you can be in the center of the South Island, it looks like high desert Nevada. You can go to the East Coast and it looks like the Brooks Range of Alaska, where we were last year, Shane.
Yeah.
And then you go to the West Coast, and it looks like Jurassic Park.
New Zealand, they don't have any tags, and you can kind of, like, you can hunt a goose with a rifle, right?
I don't know about any goose rifle tags, but yes.
There's no tags.
There are some areas where there are.
For paradise ducks.
Yeah.
What's a paradise duck?
So it's a really cool-looking waterfowl bird that, like, a ton of the major waterfowlers, like, go down there to shoot those specifically. They go down, they want to shoot the pair.
Is it bad that I want to eat one when I hear its name? Paradise duck. Is that on the menu?
Tastes like pineapple and mango.
I'll be the judge of that.
It sounds...
Totally,
you know.
But it's like here. I mean, it compares to here. These islands are closed ecosystems. Yeah. So whatever you drop in here stays here. Unless these axis deer in this case, or the red stags learn how to swim. This is a big 140 square miles of high fence.
Whoa, look at that duck. That's crazy.
Showing a paradise duck.
Yeah, Perry duck.
Yeah, this is an audio-only podcast, the rare audio-only podcast, ladies and gentlemen. That's a cool-looking duck, though, man.
that
looks like a chicken fucked a duck. Doesn't it? Like a rooster was like, bitch, I'll show you who's boss.
Duck hunters around the world and want to shoot that thing in New Zealand. No tag.
It's a big duck season. It's a big thing. For sure. We were there last year on opening duck season.
It actually looks way cooler when it's in flight because you get to see the full colors.
Oh, wow.
I think it's just cool and nice.
Well, how beautiful are these axis deer?
Amazing.
Unbelievable.
The height is crazy.
Well, Sam, you're a photographer.
Yeah, I mean, it's like photographing them is next level. I mean, I've shot photos of a ton of elk and deer, like whitetail and mule deer and all sorts of stuff. But like, it's so hot that the fur is so thin, and just like the entire thing looks sleek and like the spots and everything. It's crazy.
And for a little history on Sam and Ben and I met up in BC. It was almost 3 years ago, right?
Yeah, it's 3 years ago. Yep.
Closing on.
We were talking about some stories today. That's true.
We had a great time. We had a great time in BC, but that epic cover of Peterson's Hunting Magazine with me carrying that elk or the moose leg.
Did you take that picture?
Yeah.
Yes, he did. Sam's a badass photographer.
Actually, for my school, I want like a signed picture from you.
Oh, yeah.
That's the one I want. Can I get that?
I'll send you the
real file. I would love that cover.
I'll send you the real file.
Sam, what's your Instagram page? Because you got a lot of awesome photographs.
Yeah, it's just my name, so it's just at Sam Soholt.
S-O-H-O-L-T.
Soholt. Yeah.
Soholt. Yeah. And then you can see the epic bus.
And Sam's got the bus rolling.
Yeah.
That is so cool. Explain that bus, because that bus is so cool. We were talking about it at lunch today.
Yeah. So I bought a 1993 65 passenger Bluebird school bus.
Junior year, baby.
I like to have a year matter. It's like 1993.
I like that.
I think well, that's it does.
Part of the story.
Yeah. It's right around the time.
Well, he got a sweet deal.
George Bush's second term.
No, yeah, I did get a sweet deal. Found it on Craigslist just south of Fort Collins, Colorado, and basically bought it directly, almost directly from a school district, but they had totally rebuilt the engine and transmission. So it's like ready to go.
Yeah. So, how many miles did it have on the rebuild?
So on the body was 189,000 and then 20,000 miles on the rebuild.
So would you have, did you have to do any suspension work or axles? Or?
It's, I mean, it's pretty stiff.
Oh, I'm sure.
A little bumpy.
Yeah.
Where are we going on it?
Where do you want to go?
He's got bunk beds.
I
want to
go hunting.
So I'll be able to sleep 5 in the bus, but yes. Then I'm also going to have a 10 by 20 wall tent that sits up next to it. So we can sleep as many as we want.
And the wall tent, you're going to have hot water that pumps into the wall tent so you can actually take showers.
Yeah. So I'm going to have a wood stove in the wall tent to keep to warm it up. And then the hot tankless hot water heater will be connected to the end of the kitchen. And I'll run it out the window so you can take a hot shower in a heated wall tent.
And you talked about this while we're in BC.
Yeah. So the bus idea.
Oh.
The bus idea. So the original idea was to do like a 12-state turkey tour in a bus. Like my brother and his business partner and I like came up with this scheme, and then like it just ate at me. Like I was like, I need to get a bus.
How many people have ever said that? I need to get a bus.
But like, you know, like I'd be driving down the road and like one would drive by and like every one I was like, oh, it's a good looking bus.
It's such a good idea though for getting around, going hunting, doing hunting trips. And
yeah, and it's gonna be so I'm like ripped all the seats out and totally converting it into my little hunting shack.
It's an awesome idea.
Yeah, so spending the next year in a bus.
Isn't that funny how like when you get something in your head that you are really into and then you start locking into it and other people are like, what the fuck is wrong with you?
Yeah.
Like for me, it's like 1990s, 80s series Land Cruisers because it's the last years where they had the front and rear solid axles and those trucks can drive anywhere and they're not glamorous. They don't look good. But those fuckers never die. You go everywhere. You see 80 series Land Cruisers. They're just indestructible.
Yeah. And there's one here.
Yes, of course there is. Those solid axles. Dude, you'll find them on eBay with fucking 200,000 miles on them, and they're $50,000.
Yeah.
You know, or maybe 30. Or I might have exaggerated.
It's
yeah. Well, but they are, man. I mean, like there's something about those. And so I'd be like, that's an 80 series. My wife would be like, the fuck is wrong with you? It's an old Toyota. I'm like, no. It's an old Land Cruiser.
Yeah.
Do you understand? Like, there's a time where they were making these fucking cars that will go on forever.
Yeah.
And then they figured out, like, you don't make any money making cars that go on forever.
People drive them for 30
that's
years.
What they, yeah.
That's the same thing they figured out in Europe, though, when it comes to, like, gas. You go to the you go there and like our Toyotas there they call them the Toyota Helix whereas we're driving a Tacoma or you drive Tundra they get like 60 miles of the gallon and they have a diesel engine you cannot buy that Hilux
I think it's I think it's a U
it's a Hilux.
I call it a Helix.
Whatever
you can do whatever you want, man.
I think it's up to you.
You're the biggest one here. You can do whatever you fucking want, John.
Well, it's a Hilux is what they call it, but yeah.
Well, you know, Neil.
The more you know.
You know, Neil Young, he has a farm in Northern California, and he makes his own biodiesel. Nice. And he runs all of his, he runs all of his cars on biodiesel.
Of course he does.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Neil Young for a second.
Bad motherfucker. Neil Young's the reason why I quit concert security.
What?
I was working as a security guard in Great Woods. All the people that did martial arts with me all got security jobs in this place. And I got a job there too. And during a Neil Young concert, there's a place called Great Woods. And Great Woods is an amphitheater. So there's covered seating. And in the back, the cheaper seats are this lawn area. And in the lawn area, it got a little chilly. So dudes started fires. And the security guards had to go in and shut down the fires. and riots broke out and people started punching people and it got crazy. And I'm like, fuck doing security. So I quit. In the middle of a Neil Young concert, I put a hoodie on over my security jacket and I fucking bailed.
Are you serious?
Yes, I did.
You're good.
I was like, dude, I am not fucking getting my ass kicked or getting stabbed for Neil Young or Neil Young fans.
You told me that story. Bringing it back, he told me that story in BC. That's why I wanted
to. Dude, it was crazy. There was fires. People were lighting fires. And when one guy saw a fire, I was like, shit, I want a fire. And then all these Neil Young fans just started fires. We're talking about, I mean, I don't know how many people Great Woods in Mansfield, Massachusetts seats. I got to think it's somewhere in the it's a big ass concert place. Like I saw Sam Kinison there and Bon Jovi. It's like 15,000 seats. So, and, you know, 4,000 of them were on fire. So it's fucking
it's a
crazy.
Nice remodel.
I mean, this is like, I was 19, so this is like 86.
And Neil Young fans are crazy. They
oh, it was nuts, man. It was all.
As soon as they hear that needle and the damage done, they get off.
Southern man.
Something tells me I need to make a fire.
Light the torch.
It was dark, man. It got crazy. I fucking bailed out of there.
A lot of people don't know I used to be a fireman when I worked at Matthews.
You were a fireman?
Yeah.
You're like Forrest Gump. Do you have these stories?
A lot of people don't know I used to mow lawns.
Forrest Gump was retarded.
Forrest Gump?
Yeah, I know him.
He had like 80 chapters.
Every time I need a happy movie.
Yeah, like 80 chapters to a story. Like he was like
super slow, but really good at ping pong.
I was a fireman in
super slow,
Sparta,
really good
Wisconsin,
archery.
And yeah. We went on this fire call with this lady, and man, her house. The problem with the thing that you encounter a lot as firemen is you go on fire calls where a lot of the houses are not kept up at the level that most people would keep them up. I guess that's a politically correct way to say it.
Hoarders.
Hoarders?
Yeah. Let's just.
Great
so
job.
I went on this. A
lot
call.
Of kindling.
I went on.
I shouldn't have saved all those newspapers.
I went on.
Guess
this
I
call.
Picked the wrong time to store gasoline in the bathroom.
I went on this call, and I mean, I wouldn't have classified her as a hoarder. I would classify her more as a cat lady. But she had a vast collection of some Neil tapes.
Oh.
I remember...
8-track or cassette? Date yourself.
There was a serious cassette collection along with a lot of cats and cat turds.
Oh, no.
Places.
Where's this
in
going?
The is house? Is like how many cats does she have?
Not as many as the city of Lanai.
Well, we went to a cat sanctuary out here. There's 500 cats.
Wait,
in a cat
in Lanai?
In Lanai, yeah. There's a cat sanctuary.
Is it like caged in?
I don't know how you guys do other things besides hunting.
A family, bro. When you have little girls, you have to do other shit. You have to. This is the only way I could balance this trip out. I have to do a con game. I have to say, we're going to
the con game.
I know you have family too, man. We're going to Hawaii. Yeah. Yay. Where's daddy? Oh, he's murdering animals.
Shane's anxiety level when he's not hunting is off the charts.
It is actually
very
high. Yeah. It's super tense.
Yep. We went to.
you get really at it.
Well, it's so
Drop
fun.
Off here, dudes.
Whoa! Are you pouring Red Bull in your wine?
He's got.
What the fuck are you doing? He's got. He's pouring tequila into his Red Bull and wine. That might be a first.
What do you?
That's
call that?
Delicious.
What do you call that?
Trash bag wine.
It's a new concoction.
Let's call this the cat lady. I want one.
Everybody out there, I want one. John Dudley and I have created cat drinks woman. Before. But
yeah, you guys created Rye Brain, which is a combination of Alpha Brain and whiskey.
Is,
outstanding.
Should be served at
I drink it everywhere.
Back when he was a bartender.
Yeah.
Before the fireman.
I actually won the bartending. Me and Sharon won the bartending thing at the Traeger National Convention in Salt Lake.
Yep.
We did a smoked grapefruit Tom Collins that freaking won.
Well, this is something that you do that I have not tried, but I do want to try. John Dudley will take a bucket of water. Yeah, he will smoke his balls. He takes a bucket of water. He puts it. I'm not joking. Takes a bucket of water, puts it in the Traeger, smokes the water. Right. Yeah. Then takes that water, pours it into these ice ball holders. What do you call those things?
Silicone, like ice maker.
Yeah. Where you make a ball.
You make a whiskey ball.
Whiskey ball.
You can smoke water with like mesquite or apple, you know, apple flavored pellets or anything you want. And then you freeze them. And if you have a crappy bourbon, you can drop that the smoked ice ball in, and you can take a real like crappy bourbon and make it decent.
That's it. I'm ordering a Traeger tomorrow.
I'm a crappy bourbon drinker. I mean, is Jack Daniel's considered a crappy bourbon? No. What is that considered?
We might get shot if we say that. I would say more like anything under $7 a bottle.
This coming from a guy who's drinking tequila and wine and Red Bull.
It's called the cat lady in one glass.
That's a cat lady, ladies and gentlemen. I like it.
I'm not sure that his mixology is right on point.
We just fucked up my mini bar, by the way.
The scene in here is radical.
Bear hugs versus booze. When my family comes back here, I'm gonna have fucking some really shitty looks.
Well, because we're all going to be laying on the floor.
Like, look, baby, they're my friends. They're family. You got to let it go. You got to let it go.
Strange surfer man in my bed.
You got to let it go. These guys have they're all killers. They've killed things. Let them. They need to blow off some steam. They got PTSD from Rage Tripan.
The Cat Lady is excellent.
It's a very good drink.
Shane?
Try the cat lady.
Try the cat lady.
Joe, let me eat a little.
Get in on that. Come on, man.
No, I need. Good. I'm a little bit of a lightweight.
You don't like the cat lady?
I'm missing enough deer as it goes.
Oh, okay.
Wait.
Listen.
The cat lady's a strange.
It's pretty good. It's better than it should be.
It's good.
It's a strange cacophony of like.
Anytime you could say cacophony on a podcast, you win.
Well, that's when you're drinking tequila, wine, and Red Bull. That stuff comes out.
Let's talk about how goddamn fast these deer are. I killed one. And I killed one because he didn't know I was there. Every deer that saw me and he stood still and I shot an arrow at him, they ducked that motherfucker like Neo on the Matrix. It was so amazing watching an arrow going, and I switched arrows because John Dudley made me two builds. He made me an arrow build with 625 grain arrows that go 245 feet a second and then 496.
I thought it was 516. What's 3 grains?
The lighter ones?
Yeah,
I think they're 496. Anyway, they're still fairly heavy, but they go 275 feet per second. I have switched to the 275 feet per second arrows because these deer would see the arrow coming at them and be like, bitch, and just not even come close. So with the 275 feet per second arrows, I was catching hares. I got a couple of hares when they were looking at me. Like, I would, like, get the arrow, and I'd look at it. I'd say, oh, there's a hare on this arrow. Or I literally would give them a haircut. No blood. They would just duck under it, and it would just, like, catch the top of their head or the small of their back or something.
So we need to get you, like, a 380-grain arrow.
I'm a meathead.
I actually did a podcast with Winky about this. We did a whole – I mean, we talked for a long time about speed versus – energy. He's a big speed guy. You know, for arrow duckers, he really
explain who Winky is to the people that
Bill
listen
Winky
to.
Is a whitetail expert, whitetail deer expert. He's, you know, a very, very well known editor or writer, and he's got a great, I guess, online webisodes.
Yeah,
whitetail
semi-live online hunting show.
Yeah,
yeah.
Midwest whitetail.
Yeah, for like the world of hunting, very well respected guy.
And we had this ongoing debate, which is really cool because when I have a lot of my guests on my podcast, I like to get into things to where it interests me because it's a lot like you. There's, I wouldn't say argument, but there's debate between this, you know, A versus B. And he's very successful and he has a very good following and he has a very valid opinion. But his opinion on an arrow having a lot of speed
in order to avoid a deer dropping versus like say Adam Greentree's opinion of having just a super efficient, very heavy arrow that is maximum penetration to where regardless of what it hits, it's going to do its job.
And by dropping, what we mean is when today is a perfect example. Mm-hmm. The deer hear the sound in Lanai. Lanai in particular. The deer hear the sound of a bow launching an arrow and they bolt. Ben and I were talking. I mean talking like this. We were just talking. We're shooting the shit and there was at least two bucks and a couple of does bedded less than 20 yards away from us. And they weren't even reacting. And then I'm like, should I take this bomb? I should launch this bomb on this doe. This doe's standing there. She's staring at us. And he gives me a read. He goes, 70 yards. I'm like, fuck it up. I'm going to go with this. So I draw back 70 yards. And the doe is really like, bitch, are you serious? She slides to the left like she's in some like 1990s fucking breakdancing move.
She was electric slides breaking all the way.
It was ridiculous. Breaking? Like, I'd have electric no – I shot exactly where she was standing and she was nowhere near.
I was watching the vine and I told you after that arrow flew, I was like, you hit exactly where you were aiming in the 10 ring.
Yeah.
That deer was swimming to Maui before your
they're
arrow.
So fast. They're
that's
so
the crazy
fast.
The thing is though, is like at 70 yards, if they're looking at you and they react, it's not like you're missing them by inches or millimeters. They could be like
feet.
6 feet away six from feet. Your feet. Arrow.
Yeah.
Imagine if UFC fighters had the instincts of an axis. You wouldn't even be able to. You'd have to watch it in slow motion and know what the hell went on.
Mighty Mouse. Demetrius Mighty Mouse Johnson. Best pound-for-pound fighter in the world. Might as well be an axis deer.
So and for the
real,
podcast
for
is
real. For real. For real. I mean, that's like literally what we're talking about. Like people who fight Mighty Mouse, they probably feel like a dude who's shooting at an axis deer who's looking right at them. You have no chance. But for bow hunting, it is probably the best training you could ever have. And we were talking about this because this whole thing was put together. Shout out to Yeti Coolers. Greatest coolers on the planet Earth. Ben O'Brien, big exec at Yeti Coolers. This whole thing was whatever the fuck he is, coordinator, homeboy. This whole thing was put together. And while we were here, we were thinking like this might be the ultimate destination for bow hunters to prepare for any other hunt.
Yeah. Yeah. You get to experience it all.
Yeah.
You get to experience spot and stalk, a diversity of terrain. And then in the end, you have a lot of opportunity.
And animals that don't let you fuck up.
Yeah.
You have but if you do, like 15 minutes later, you're on another group.
Right. That's the beautiful thing. It's an amazing training opportunity. Yeah. So Bill Winky's debate, speed versus – so the drop means the deer hear the sound of an arrow, which is like – they hear the sound of a bow going off, and they literally duck down. Not duck because they think an arrow is coming. They duck because they're preparing to lower themselves and launch themselves forward.
Yeah. A lot of times – people think they're ducking the arrow, but what happens is when someone gets scared, it's a lot like Sharon, my wife, is bad about this. I'll come around the corner and be like, hey, babe. And she'll.
Ah!
Yeah. And ducks, what they do.
She jumps a string at home.
She is a string. Honey, quit ducking the string.
Honey, you're jumping the string. I'm just trying to say hi.
She's a string jumper. What happens is the deer, they just pick their legs off the ground. And that's the cool thing about videoing is when you video your hunts, you actually get to relive those hunts again. You can slow them down, watch them. And really, you know, it's a reaction of they're just clenching up, so they're lifting their feet off the ground. So gravity is dropping, depending on their body weight, it's dropping them at a certain speed.
Oh, so they're lifting their feet so that they can go forward.
Yeah, they're just picking up as a reaction, like, and then once they spring, they're going. Right. But the weight of their body is actually dropping that down. So, you know, like with an elk, obviously it's a lot more mass. So they'll drop at a faster rate than something that's lighter. But a lot of times their legs are just coming up to the body and the gravity is pulling them down.
So what is Bill Winky's philosophy?
He really thinks speed is more of a benefit than momentum or kinetic energy. But in saying that, Bill is also very focused on a medium game animal. So when we talk about, you know, a white-tailed deer is a lot different than an elk or a moose. So, you know, momentum, which is a heavier arrow traveling at a, maybe at a slower rate of speed, but it delivers a lot more energy. It's a lot like when Foreman used to fight. You know, when I watched Foreman, or when I watched a lot of his older fights, he never looked like he was hitting anyone hard. But when his glove hit someone, their whole body was taking a tremendous amount of energy because it was a big freaking fist. And
you know why?
Arm.
you feel like he wasn't hitting hard because you weren't there. There's something that's lost in film. Like, there's a lot of people that I've seen hit people in person, and they just have – there's people that are built weird. And George Foreman is a perfect example. George Foreman is a guy – I've never met him personally.
Yep.
But he has hands that are the size of canned hams. They're fucking enormous.
Are they bigger than Lesnar's?
Probably in the neighborhood. Brock Lesnar could have been –
I've seen those mitts.
He's a freak. He could have been the greatest heavyweight of all time if he was fully dedicated and started from the time he was in high school and went straight into MMA. But
I agree.
He spent so much time in pro wrestling, but if you look at Brock Lesnar's Columbine, hello, cat lady. If you look at Brock Lesnar's combine numbers, his NFL combine numbers, they're insane. He bench pressed 225 pounds, something like 45 reps.
That's stupid.
Fucking vertical is off the roof. His long jump is insane for a guy who's almost 300 pounds. He's a freak. I've seen a lot of athletic freaks. I've never seen anybody as more freaky than Brock Lesnar. But that freaky athleticism, what's beautiful about MMA, that freaky athleticism does not overcome technique and long-term training in the particular disciplines of MMA. That's why Cain Velasquez beat the shit out of him. Whereas Cain Velasquez, he's a freak too, but he's a cardio freak. Different kind of freak, not a power freak.
But he
freak.
Doesn't look like it.
Exactly. But it's one of those things. You got to be there to see him. If you saw Cain Velasquez fight in person, you would say, Jesus Christ.
Like a freaking wave.
But it doesn't matter.
Chain surfs.
But he's got a mind.
Though. When he hits someone, it wrinkles for ages.
He's got a mind. Cain Velasquez has got a mind and like his lungs. Like one of the things they say about hunting is that what kills animals is legs and lungs.
Really?
Yeah, elk especially. Because, like, being able to get to where the elk are. Being able to, being able to, like, have the cardio. It's not a coincidence that a guy like Cam Haynes became a psychopathic endurance athlete because he's obsessed with elk hunting. I mean, I talked to him about it. He's like, the whole thing with me was I had to figure out how to get to those elk. You know, like, how do I get to those elk? I'm tired. Like, how do I not be tired? I got to start running. How do I get more endurance? Well, I got to run longer. I got to learn harder. I got to run hills. I got to run mountains. And it's the same thing with fighting. Like, if you're, like, an explosive, super fast athlete, but you run out of gas, you're fucked. You know, like, you have this short window of time to get the job done. And if the guy who you're fighting can survive that storm, you're kind of fucked, you know, because then you don't have any gas left, and that's Brock Lesnar. Brock Lesnar never really developed into the type of, like, fully evolved MMA fighter. But what he did have is this freak athletic body. That's the same thing with George Foreman. If you watch that Rumble in the Jungle, George Foreman came out of the gate storming, hit Muhammad Ali with these body shots. Like, even a better fight is watch George Foreman versus Joe Frazier, where he literally picks him up with shots. He hits him, and you see Joe Frazier's body go up in the air from getting hit because Foreman was so powerful. But Muhammad Ali was skillful enough, so when the punches were hitting him, he was sliding just a little bit out of the way, just a little bit out of the way with each punch, absorbing them but moving with them, so it took a lot of the energy away from him. And I think that that's a lot. You could say this is like an analogy to, like, arrows. and a heavy weight arrow, which goes slower,
yeah.
or a fast arrow, which doesn't have as much momentum, doesn't have as much kinetic energy, but it's quicker.
It gets
quicker.
If they both connect on point A at the same time, Foreman is definitely doing more damage.
Sure. So if you have Mighty Mouse versus George Foreman, this is at a certain point in time, I got to bet on George Foreman. I mean, until we get to like, what are you looking for?
More cat lady,
more Red Bull.
A Red Bull, more Red Bull.
Fill up my cat ladies.
Well, like here, there's another refrigerator in that other room back there too.
Here, for sure, like that arrow comparison is, and we were shooting just today. Like we were hunting, we were just messing around talking, and we decided to shoot this tree just to see.
Yeah, that's a perfect example of a tree.
So Joe is pulling 80, how many pounds?
86 pounds.
86 pounds, and his arrow weighs how many, what's the grain?
Somewhere around 500 grains.
That's a heavy arrow. I'm shooting 68 pounds, and my arrow is 320 grains. So roughly half weight and much less draw weight than you. He shoots this tree, dead centers this thing, and his broadhead sticks right in the center of this tree, and the arrow stays in.
The broadhead disappears.
The broadhead disappears. It goes right up to the insert.
Yeah.
I shoot the tree, my arrow deflects off the side of the tree, and the broadhead, the side of the broadhead, the third blade of the broadhead gets stuck in a branch. And then he looks at me and goes, heavier arrow.
Stop shooting that bitch ass arrows. Like
bitch ass. But it's true.
If you would have had Miley.
Miley Cyrus is the name that John Dudley gave to my 625 grain arrow setup, which it goes slower, but it does horrendous damage.
Joe sent me his bow and he said, dude, build me something freaking extreme.
We just had a conversation. We were trying to figure out.
I actually downloaded a GIF file of Miley Cyrus on the wrecking ball. Because I was shooting at 85 yards at my house. And when his arrow would hit my target, the next time I would shoot, all I could see is the elk horns moving on my target because it was still shaking from the arrow that I shot before it. Wow. So when Joe said, dude, how's that setup doing? Because I had told, actually, I built like three different options. But I told him, I said, man, this thing's hitting like a freaking wrecking ball. Because the target would just shake. And by the time I drew back again and would be aiming for the second arrow, I could still see the horns moving from the first arrow. So then I ended up downloading a GIF of Miley Cyrus riding that wrecking ball back and forth. And I said...
This is what it sounds like in the draw cycle.
You hear the limbs creaking, pulling back this Lincoln log.
No wonder the accents are ducking this thing.
Let's just all be silent until we get to the chorus.
That's what the accents do here when the arrow's on its way.
Who does all your Photoshop work?
Oh, a bunch of people.
All right. We need a Photoshop work of Joe Rogan's head on Miley Cyrus.
Right now, vegans are crying. This is not funny.
It's not a good day in Hawaii unless you're drinking a cat lady and listening to Miley Cyrus.
Empty your quiver on access gear.
I brought 5 extra arrows today. I have a 7 arrow tight spot, and I brought a 5 arrow extra quiver. Because I'm like, today's my last day.
How many arrows did you bring on this trip, Joe?
50.
50. That might be some kind of record, for real.
Came all from that guy.
We must clarify this. When Joe says training, like we're not training on these animals. We're talking about the training of spotting an animal, stalking it, and making what is an efficient shot. Like it's a very ethical practice. But training just means like opportunity after opportunity after opportunity, meaning that you can get after these animals and learn how they move, how you move, how you can be quiet, when to duck, when to draw.
Well, it's just practice.
It's that mental repetition.
In a single day of hunting here, I mean, you have more opportunities on spotting stocks than the majority of guys are going to have in an entire hunting trip. on
maybe a season,
maybe a season. On,
yeah,
on, I think on I had mule deer, elk, anything like that.
I think I had so many. The first day, which we'll talk about island time in a little bit. First day seems sounds like, I think it was a month ago.
Not talk about yeah. island time.
Listen, they got it right. You're an island boy. You guys got it right. This is the way to live. The way I live is bullshit. It is. It's bullshit. You know, everybody's all fucking nervous and worrying and stressed. I come here, I'm like, I'm so relaxed. My kids are relaxed. My wife's relaxed. I'm like, we're so relaxed. I'm like, hey, wait a minute. Why shouldn't we be relaxed?
Yeah.
It's what? The
days
Friday?
Last 40 hours, too.
It's Friday, and we got
wait,
here.
What?
We got here Monday. Monday and night. It's Friday, and all of us were saying the other day, we feel like we've been here for
here a month.
Yeah.
I feel like when I go home, my son's going to be like 17 years old.
And shout out to Traeger for shipping a fucking grill.
Oh, yeah.
Your happy birthday,
thank
John.
You. Yeah. Jab, Tyler.
Yeah, happy birthday.
Danny. Oh, yeah.
My Chad, your boy Chad Ward has changed the way I fucking cook meat.
Yep. Chad Ward at Whiskey Bent Barbecue is his Instagram. We didn't have a chance to reverse sear last night because we were actually trying to just chill out on the beach. But we ended up, we cooked Ben and Remy's mouflon backstraps. We cooked.
And a mouflon, explain what a mouflon is.
A mouflon is a sheep. Hawaiian sheep. Really, really cool.
Sorry. I missed Miley a little bit. Continue.
By the way, I've never listened to that song before. You sent me that anime. I knew she wrote that song, but I don't even know if she wrote it. She sang it. Shout out to Miley Cyrus.
She's had more press time in the last 30 minutes than she has in the last.
I'm a big
two
fan,
years.
Dude. I don't know what you're talking about.
You did Miley Cyrus last night, though, dude. Yeah. It was like everything you made was super legit, and I was blown away by how I've eaten a lot of mouflons actually, but I was blown away by like that side by side comparison, like mouflon sheep compared to the Axis deer. It was really good.
Devastated. I actually thought it was true, because what's kind of sucks about this whole trip is the one thing I really wanted to shoot was a mouflon on Hawaii. Sorry, Shane's playing my little violin with his fingers. I had a lot of opportunities to shoot mouflon in states that didn't have native mouflon. And I always said, if I want to shoot a mouflon, I really want to shoot it in Hawaii. Just because that's me as a hunter.
They're free ranging.
Right. And I had asked the guide if they had mouflon. And he said, well, yeah, but it's really tough to get up there. And little did I know that, meanwhile, Ben and Remy Warren had secretly arranged a hunt up in mouflon territory, which literally looked like New Zealand, and they went up and I can't believe you got two. That's amazing.
We would have had more than two. I missed one at 30 yards.
A good one too.
A good one. A giant one.
You needed a faster arrow.
I needed a George Foreman.
Well, what do you? You know, you needed a Mighty Mouse.
I need a Mighty Mouse.
You needed a Mighty
Mouse. So, what do you? This whole thing about Bill Winky, before we get off target, I mean, for the archers out there, like, where do you stand on this? Do you think there's, like, a comfortable medium, like maybe a Tyron Woodley, who's a powerful 170-pounder, who's also lightning fast?
I think I really want the Conor McGregor, where...
I was going to say, he's I'm not like a fight analyst, but...
Tyron Woodley would disagree.
Extremely powerful.
Sorry, Tyron.
Yeah, he is, but...
Tyron, sorry. I mean, I know... Connor talked some crap to you in the last press conference, but I actually like that arrow that the animal thinks that he knows what's coming, but then when it hits him, it's like, what just happened?
Right, got there too quick.
Because I've been at a couple different fights that you've invited me on, thank you. When Connor hits people, they think they know what it's going to feel like, but then when it does, like when that first left hand hits them, their face really changes. Like, I think they expect what it's gonna feel like, but when they actually feel it,
yeah,
it's a totally different expression.
I mean, I've been that way with in competition, which I've, you know, I've shot professionally for a lot of years. And then when you meet someone in a match and then they actually stand next to you and compete with you, it's, you can tell on their face that they're experiencing something different than they prepare for.
Right.
I've seen that when Connor hits people and all of a sudden they just, their face changes like, oh crap.
I think that's with every competition, right? Is that the same with surfing? Like you're around some people and you see,
like underestimating them.
Well, not only that, but like maybe when you're coming up, like you see someone who's on just another level and you go, wow, okay, there's that too.
When
you know what I mean?
Once you experience them live where you're like, wait a minute.
Yeah. And there's a lot of guys who just don't like really like sort of like the same way you're saying that, like it doesn't translate like live fights to film.
Right.
You know, it's like, oh yeah, that guy's pretty badass. But in real life, you're like, you can't believe how fast and how powerful people are.
Yeah.
It's like that with surfing. I think it's like that with any sport where it's like, you know, you're expecting to see this guy who you've heard of or read about or watched films of or something. And then you see it in real life and you're like, what the hell?
You got to be there live, right? Yeah.
You need to make a music comparison to what we're talking about here. Like maybe like Adele, possibly.
I would go with Pavarotti, but
you happen to have.
Look it up. Look it up.
He's going to Google.
I just happen to have.
Like this is guy, this is this heavyweight named Francis Ngannou, who's this African heavyweight who's in the UFC, who's like one of the best fighters in the heavyweight division right now. He's fucking terrifying. And
what's his name?
Francis Ngannou.
Sorry. What is that?
But this guy in Ganu, there's something crazy. He's just, first of all, he's enormous. He's like 260 pounds.
Wait, I've seen him.
Stacked. Built like, he's just built like a brick shit house. Yeah. Knocked out Andre Arlovski with one punch. But there's something about him, like literally when he's walking into the cage, he's like, his stomps are different. Like his body is like denser.
Your monitor at the desk is shaking.
He clips like, people and they just go, "What in the fuck?" But it's a lot like Foreman's. Like you got to be there. If you see him hit people, you go, "Oh, that guy can't take a punch." No. You got to be there, man. You got to be there and the impact. Like when in 1996, 97, I watched. There's a guy that is one of the most underrated heavyweights of all time. His name is Pedro Hizo. And Pedro Hizo was a real pioneer in MMA and in Muay Thai. And he was training one time at this place called Beverly Hills Jiu-Jitsu. And he was kicking this heavy bag. And he was like, whoomp! He was kicking this bag. And I guess if you saw a video, it'd be kind of impressive. But when I was there live, I was like, Jesus fucking Christ.
I didn't even feel it.
It was just like three or four levels past anybody I'd ever seen in terms of like the amount of power they could generate with a kick. And that's like the same thing with Ngannou. That's the same thing with a lot of people. It's like there's something about seeing something live that's, you can sort of like get an idea. Like I'm sure if you saw a guy surf in a video, you'd be like, oh, that guy, that's a bad motherfucker, right? But like, for the average person, you kind of got to see something live.
Yeah, there's like little details that you can, you know, sort of really recognize if you know it really, really well, whether it's fighting or surfing or whatever, anything else. But
anything.
Even hunting.
Like, yeah.
We're talking about, there's guys like, you know, Remy's not here with us now, but he was here all week hunting with us.
Perfect example.
Perfect example. A guy like Remy Warren or Adam Greentree, two perfect examples of guys that are like cut from the same cloth.
Or Cam Haynes.
Cam Haynes. Remy made a shot on the Mouflon, earmuffs, John, earmuffs. When he made a shot on this Mouflon, 57 yards, it seemed to me like his arrow made an S pattern to the cantaloupe-sized target that he's shooting at 57 yards, and he shot through like six trees from a knee with a, like a, at a, like a 45 degree angle with his bow.
I would like to tell you about a shot that I saw John Dudley shoot a couple of days ago, but I need permission.
You don't have permission.
Let me just say,
let's get this guy another cat lady.
You're gonna tell 1 billion people.
No. Let me just say, I saw some shit.
Let's just
move on.
Let's just include John Dudley.
I saw some shit that I would never attempt, but it ended with a perfect heart shot an ethical kill, an animal that died in seconds.
That's what you're talking about, right? But seeing something live, like, you can get an idea of how hard something is until you see it live.
Exactly.
Like, that's like the expectation of what Dudley can
do. Let me tell you something, what our guide said when he saw what John Dudley did.
Have you ever seen Will Ferrell when he said, "What just happened?"
No, that just happened. Yeah, that just happened.
Whatever. Like, that's what Joe Rogan's face looked like when he turned around.
Well, at least I knew what you can do. The guy was like, "Holy Jesus. Holy Jesus, he just shot that." I'm like, "I told you he was going to kill it." I mean, you had to be there. But it's like, there's levels to everything. There's levels to writing. There's levels to singing. There's levels to poetry. I don't know. I don't believe that. But there's levels to surfing, for sure. There's levels to everything,
drinking,
man.
Drinking, cat lady.
Yeah.
That cat lady,
that's top level,
knows how to roll.
Yeah.
Cat lady's good drink. I like it. I was skeptical at first.
Everyone's skeptical of cat lady. But she can bring her claws out.
She brings
for those
it.
Of you listening, it's a Tally Vineyards
do
2013.
Well, for those listening, it's
Pinot Noir.
It's a
Tonight?
Room service bar.
Red wine.
It's a red wine. It's a 3-part red wine with a 1-part tequila Patron and a 1.5-part Red Bull sugar free.
What do they call room service? What do they call the room bars?
Mini bars.
Rape. Financial rape. We've gone a long way trying to figure out, like, whether or not Bill Winky is right or Adam Greentree is right.
So I'll say just one thing about arrow weight or speed. So there's at a known distance, arrow weight doesn't matter.
Right.
So if you know how far you're shooting, arrow weight doesn't matter. And I'm all for shooting a very heavy arrow because of the momentum.
But at a known distance?
At a known distance. So if you can range something, you know exactly how far away it is.
And it won't move.
And it won't move.
Well, that's obvious.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
For sure.
Right. So it's great to shoot a heavier arrow. Bring it. Faster arrow comes, has an advantage, is when something comes running in and you have to snap shoot at it.
Right.
It's like, that's at, I think, 37 yards. And say it's at 30. But if you have a faster arrow, you're only going to miss, but you're going to miss by a lot less.
Because it doesn't drop as much.
Because it doesn't drop.
There's not actually this much.
It's less arc.
It's flatter. Yeah. It's just a flatter trajectory.
Right.
Yeah. So I think, to answer your question, I think there is a happy medium. You know, so like for you, you're shooting a heavier bow. So your arrow, like a heavier arrow is going to go faster. And people with longer draw length, their arrow is going to go faster and they can shoot a heavier arrow.
Doug, wouldn't you agree though that like 90% of like archery hunters will shoot like a medium arrow though because of that? There's not that many like Cam Haynes or Joes that want like a really heavy arrow with a heavy broadhead. There's not that many people that do that.
What do you shoot?
Other than like people who like exclusively hunt elk or exclusively hunt moose or exclusively hunt water buffalo.
Right.
Shane has two different arrows in his quiver.
What are you shooting?
I shoot Elite. I forget what they're called. They're 8.1 grains per inch. They're Elite. I don't know why I'm drawing a blank.
How many grains are your full?
Did you do the Victory?
Yeah.
Oh, the VAPs.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the Victory Armor Piercing.
No. Mine are Victory Elites.
Oh, okay.
They're called.
Gotcha. Yeah.
Victory Archery Elites.
Yeah.
And they're 8.1 grains per inch.
Yeah.
I'm not exactly sure what that.
So for people listening, like 500 grains is about 1 ounce. Is that correct? John?
John.
What?
Call your mom. Texting.
I was actually trying to refer back to a heavy hitter that I didn't know the actual force of. I went to the Arnold Classic to compete in, like, I think it was 2005.
I told you.
What are you doing? Competing as what? What kind of competition?
Just had a birthday.
No, wait a minute. What were you doing?
I
was bowling.
When I fought the Vietnam War.
Wait a minute. You're old enough.
When I was canoeing competitively.
Yeah. I actually won 2 Arnold Classics, thank you.
What's an Arnold Classic? Arnold Palmer?
Tank Abbott was fighting Wesley Walls.
Who?
That's not an answer to the question. What's an Arnold
Wait a minute.
Classic?
John Walls?
Who? Wesley. And Wesley knocked him out with a knee to the face.
No.
But anyway,
No.
I was with...
Stop, yeah. stop.
Yeah, ladies.
Stop.
100% true.
For what organization?
It was for the Arnold Classic. They had UFC
in Columbus, Ohio.
Listen to me. Tank Abbott was never knocked out by a guy named Wesley Walls. This is incorrect. What year is this?
Is it Wesley Sims? 2005 or 2006? I was there live.
Tank Abbott.
Yep.
Was
took
knocked out with
the face
what?
In the second round.
Tank Abbott was never knocked out with a knee to the face
was
in the second
literally
round.
Literally, the bell rung.
But pull up Tank Abbott's Wikipedia page.
I'm so excited that I know something that Joe doesn't.
You definitely don't.
For UFC.
You definitely don't. You won't be excited in a few moments.
I wish the powerful Jamie was here.
What's that?
Do you remember the fight that Tank Abbott got his knee kicked in?
Oh, yeah. Maury Smith. Maury Smith kicked the fuck out of his legs.
Listen.
Yeah.
This isn't a lie. This is not cat lady talk.
Okay.
So when I went to the Arnold Classic, I was invited there by Arnold and Frank Zane. I went there. I did win.
In what? What'd you do?
For archery. They had archery. Yeah.
Archery at the Arnold Classic?
Yeah. And then after the second year, I recommended to Arnold.
Did you get his wiki?
I recommended to Arnold that they actually, instead of having professional archery, they have the NASP Ohio State Finals there so that they could have the high school NASP program have their finals at the Arnold Classic, which I thought would be better for the sport of archery. But anyway, I went to the UFC fight. It was the first time in Ohio that they had that at the UFC style MMA fight at the Arnold Classic. And Tank fought Wesley Walls, I believe. And when
Correa?
No.
Cabbage. That's Cabbage Correa.
When
he's from Hawaii, by the way. Let me check that out.
This is true. I'm not.
Joe. He knocked out Cabbage. It was a K-1 fight.
Joe, when I.
By the way,
I
got a photographic
memory.
Have
I ever lied to you?
No, you definitely haven't, but I just think you're incorrect.
No. 100% I saw it. So okay. Anyway, I'm ringside corner. So where the fighters come up the aisle to the ring, I'm right at corner.
What year was this?
First seat. I think it was 2006. Maybe it was 2005. I'll have to look at my trophy. But that's true. But anyway, I was sitting there and I was all excited because I was getting to see Tank Abbott fight.
He beat Wesley Cabbage Correa.
Nope.
He knocked him out with one punch and Rumble on the Rock in Hawaii. No. That's definitely right.
It's at the Arnold Classic.
Okay.
Let me.
Okay.
Arnold Classic.
He lost.
Do Arnold Classic 2005.
And it was a UFC fight. You're right? Is that what you're saying? Here's the problem. By the time.
It was at the Arnold Classic.
Sweetie. By the time 2005 rolled around, the Tank wasn't in the UFC anymore.
Right.
In 2005, he got knocked out in Rumble on the Rock. Or he knocked out, excuse me. Wesley Correa, who's from Hawaii, Cabbage is his name. He got knocked out in Rumble on the Rock in Hawaii. And that was a BJ Penn promotion.
No.
BJ Penn was a promoter for a while. Before that, he fought in UFC 45, and he lost to Wesley Correa. He got TKO'd, and that was in Connecticut. So that's Wesley Correa.
I can tell you right now.
He got submitted by Chemo. Before that, he got submitted by Frank Mir with a toe hold. Before that, he got knocked out by Pedro Hizo. I think that was in Brazil. Yes, it was. Thank you. Before that, he beat Hugo Duarte, which is a very tough guy. That was 1998. Your timing's all shit!
No, let's clear this up. Get Arnold on the phone.
Yeah.
Ask him who won.
Listen.
Ask him what happened.
There's certain things that I would defer to your judgment. UFC fights are not on that list.
Well, I'm going to prove you wrong.
Well, you're definitely not going to, but good luck.
Definitely.
Listen, I've seen every Tank Abbott fight ever. I know who beat him. I know who didn't beat him. You know, I've been there for a good percentage of them.
I'm going to say this as a friend.
As a friend.
I watched Tank Abbott get knocked out in the
second round.
You
might have thought it was Tank Abbott.
No. Because Tank Abbott has a goatee that's this long.
Yeah, a lot of other guys do too.
No, Abbott or something. All I'm saying is Tank came out, and what I was going to say is, a lot like Brock or whatever,
I was excited to high five Tank, and I was on the inside corner of where they come out.
Right.
And I like Tank came out, and he was coming out to his music, and he was jacked. And I was supposed to shoot the next day for the tournament. And I put my hand up like this for him to high-five me as he was coming down. And he was so jacked for the fight. I literally think he possibly ripped my shoulder out of the socket. I'm not kidding. How hard that dude hit my hand. And he was like, and I was like, yeah, bro. I was like, and he freaking hit my hand so hard that I actually thought, like, where's my labor mat? Does someone up in the third row have that thing? Because it got hit so hard.
Give him the Wikipedia page.
I'm working on all this.
This cat lady is a motherfucker.
I'm not kidding.
I know you're not.
How awesome is it, Joe, when you walk back to your hotel here on Lanai at the Four Seasons and you're face paint, camouflage, your bow with all your arrows, and then you just roll right in the Four Seasons and no one
tries. Well, here's the thing. They're super friendly. They're like, did you get one?
Yeah.
They're talking that Hawaiian accent. How'd you do today?
Well, like, think about that if you did that at any other hotel in the world.
Any other Four Seasons, for sure. Yeah, Four Seasons in Beverly Hills. They'd be like, what the fuck? It's a terrorist attack.
Yeah, dude, call them police.
This has become John Dudley trying to research his... Well, erroneous Tank Gabbick. I know you are, sweetie.
I think it was Wesley Walls.
I don't know who that is.
Exactly. That's why I'd be right.
No. No.
If anyone out there can please...
Well, Ben has the fucking Wikipedia. There's no Wesley Walls.
I'm reading about 2005 right now.
Listen, by the time 2005 rolled around, Tank wasn't... I don't believe he was fighting in the UFC. I believe his last fights in the UFC were against Chemo and Frank Mir. I think Frank Mir got him in a toehold. I think Chemo got him in an arm triangle, a head and arm choke. I think that was his last fights in the UFC. Shout out to Tank Abbott if you're listening. No disrespect.
Well, Tank.
He definitely didn't get KO'd by some dude that doesn't exist.
Yeah, he did.
He got the shit kicked out of his knee on that one fight I saw him in.
Yeah, that was Maurice Smith. Maurice Smith was a world champion kickboxer and one of the first guys to have world class kickboxing.
Wesley, he was in white compression shorts. He was.
How many cat ladies?
Those compression shorts you're wearing at the beach.
How many cat ladies did you have?
And
how much peyote was mixed in?
Compression shorts. He was struggling to barely stay alive in the first, and in the second, he literally came off the bell with this huge flying knee and freaking clock Tank right here in the eye, and he was down to the mat. And the next day, I saw Tank. And Lou Ferrigno and freaking everybody else at the Arnold Classic, and he had this huge freaking welt, and he was knocked out in one kick. One knee to the eye.
Boy, I wish this wasn't in a podcast so we could.
Well, I want to just tell you the Arnold Classic seems amazing. So who knows what it is? Saturday, March 5th of 2005, here's what the event looked like. It was a mixed martial arts festival.
Yes.
Olympic weightlifting.
Yes.
Arnold Gymnastics Challenge.
Yes.
Arnold Dance Sport Classic. That's
before
8 a.m.
Jesus.
It'd be 9 a.m.
Give me a time machine.
Now we're at 9 a.m. or it's still early in the morning.
Take me back 12 years ago so I can witness this live.
9 a.m. Arnold Cheerleading Classic. Dance Team Competition. Arnold Strength Training Summit. Arnold Table Tennis Challenge.
Meanwhile, while this was going on, Arnold was fucking his maid.
He was
shooting loads into his maid.
Now we're at 10 a.m. We've almost had a full day.
Okay.
The yoga for sports clinics. And then the arm wrestling finals.
Mm.
Then the VIP photo opportunity with Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Amazing.
Then the Arnold Strongman. And then at 3 p.m. the World Record Bench Press Challenge. And at 7 p.m. the end of the day, the Arnold Strongman finals.
A lot of shit.
Where's the archery?
And there's a VIP buffet that, for some reason, VIP buffet / dance party that starts at 10 p.m.
/ dance party.
If you go back in time to 2005, the dance party starts at 10.
Now, here's the real question: do you dance first and then get a good appetite,
or
and dance sluggish?
There's no way to like go to the first event that day and play through all day without cat ladies.
Yeah.
There's no way to do it.
By the time you get to yoga for sports at 11 a.m., you're like, dude, I'm a third cat lady.
Oh.
Well, I got alcohol poisoning.
Have you found this mysterious person that haunts your dreams?
No, it's true.
They're not even real. That person's not even real.
Well, the problem is Cabbage has way more cabbage than Walls did.
You mean Wesley Correa?
Yeah, but...
Well, whoever this Wesley Walls guy is, just Google that fictional person.
Wesley Walls was a receiver, I believe, for Carolina Panthers at some point.
He could have been. I heard he was a bass fisherman on the Pro Tour.
I hope he's listening.
I'm telling you.
He's a representative of Shimano.
Wait, no, it wasn't Wesley Walls.
Yeah, you're right. You're definitely right about that. I'll let you off the hook. He's dropping now.
You let him off the 45 minutes into the conversation.
It's impossible not to. There's certain shit you just can't question me on. And mixed martial arts records are on that list.
Tank Abbott being one of them.
If anyone out there...
No, they're definitely not right. Listen, I've called more than 1,500 fights. I've been working for the UFC since 1997. I'm definitely right.
Yes.
Yeah, I've watched every single one of Cabbage's and Tank Abbott's losses and wins. Seen them all.
I've never seen any Cabbage fights.
Cabbage's a bad motherfucker. Had a hell of a chin. The dude could take ridiculous punishment. The Andrei Arlovsky fight was a big proof of that. So is the Tim Sylvia fight. He could take some bombs. Tough guy. Tank Abbott KO'd him. In Hawaii.
I know... That all I can tell you is
you three cat ladies in.
There's a lot in that litter box.
Toxoplasma.
I'm just telling you right now, Wesley, if you're out there,
Wesley doesn't. He's not even real. You're gonna make him. It's like Candyman.
Wesley Sims.
Wes Sims, who beat Frank Mir, that might have been. He stomped him.
Wesley Wall is actually.
I don't think Wes Sims
barbed in my house. And
oh my god! Oh my!
We gotta cut him off, folks. We gotta cut him off. Let's move on to other things that are more important.
What do we want to talk about?
Whoever this Wesley Walls guy is. There's going to be a Wesley Walls. It's going to be a new character that starts trolling your Instagram.
I
want a rematch with Tank Abbott. I know I won. They erased it from the records. The Illuminati. Scrub
Flat
all
Earth.
Flat Earth. Hollow Earth. Square Earth. I'm down with all them things.
That fight happened on the flat earth, bro.
Nobody landed on the fucking moon, I'll tell you that right now. Dinosaurs aren't even real.
Joe and I had an interesting conversation to change the subject earlier today. It was discussing like what hunting does to your psyche.
Yeah.
I feel like that's a pretty interesting thing to talk about while we're here in the midst of a table full of booze and great people that hunt. So like talk about what we were chatting about today.
I think it's the ultimate struggle. I think that's why everybody at this table who also does very difficult things is attracted to it so much, because there's such finality to it. I mean, everyone at this table has ended the life of an animal, and it's very difficult to do. And like we were talking about, these animals jumping the string, and these animals like so tuned in to what you're doing and your movement and your intentions. That there's and accomplishing that struggle and getting through that struggle, you know, it's very compelling. And I hate to use the word addictive because it has so many negative connotations attached to it, but it might be the best word to describe to it, because it becomes a part of who you are. And I know, Shane, you got this issue, right? We all do, right?
Yeah, bad.
You got a bat.
Yeah. But you can see him twitching.
It's like drawing.
Yeah. He's hoping an axe will walk by this window right now.
I mean, we've been talking a little too long. He's like starting to get.
Yeah. Addictive is not like the addictive is not the killing part.
No.
The addiction is the challenge to yourself mentally, physically. Some of the things that you can do to come up against that ultimate challenge. You know, it's a singular event. Like, I see this deer, whatever type of deer it is, or I see this animal, and I got to go get that thing.
Yeah.
Like, those singular events in your life, there's not a whole lot of those things. Like, your daily life is super complex, right? You're challenged on a lot of different existential levels.
Yeah.
This is, like, all the layers of humanity. You strip those things away.
And it's also constantly changing and moving. It's not like bowling. Like, you step up to the line, the pins are set, you roll the ball, you hope you knock them down. Yeah. You know, it's so complex. There's so many variables. You're stalking. Did I step on a twig? Snap. The deer pops his head up and looks at you. Ah, oh, I'm blown.
There's so many ways to blow it.
Yeah.
So many ways.
And it's never the same. Like you said, like bowling or baseball or those things, you're trying to literally repeat the repetitive motion of that. There is a repetitive motion in the process of drawing your bow and letting an arrow fly, but there's no repetition in what that situation requires, like whether you have to shoot from a knee or whether you have to shoot at an angle or whether you have to wait or go quick.
Or off your butt or off a tree.
Yeah. There is no repetition in the actual experience of letting an arrow fly at a deer.
No.
Which is the most challenging thing because there's almost no way to prepare for it.
And then the reward is also like so primal. You actually consume the animal. You're eating it. It's the most health. And here's the crazy thing. It's not like it's bad for you. It's not like you kill a bag of Cheetos.
Yeah.
Right? You're killing the and eating the most nutritious animal that you can eat. It's literally double the protein content per ounce than domestic beef.
I remember one time I talked to Andrew Zimmern in an interview. Like I think that's how we met, just for an article for Peaches and Sunny. I was talking to Andrew Zimmern about it, of course, you know, chef, traveler. And he was like, man, I really think of killing a deer, like plucking a tomato out of the garden when it's just the right amount. It's just right. It's plump and red. It's ready to eat. Like, I think of killing a deer like I think of plucking that tomato and taking it into the kitchen. And
yeah.
It's like that experience of growing that thing and slicing it up and then feeding your family is similar to going out and killing something.
It is.
And hunting has made me want to garden and have chickens and do it. Hunting has flipped the switch for me. To understand that, like, the feeling it takes to eat something that you've not only provided, but you've worked for and trained for and mentally suffered for at some level, physically, too.
Well, and it's like a major, you just have that real connection to your food, which you don't have otherwise. You just don't. Like, it's the same thing whether you're, growing your own veggies or whatever you're doing in your garden or going out and getting your own meat, you know.
Yeah. And it changes what your food is, right?
You're not peeling out of a cellophane, like, container. Yeah.
Well, just imagine that. Like, just imagine the story of, somebody said, okay, you're a predator, you're a lion. Well, years down the road, you're still a predator, but somebody else is going to deliver that antelope to you.
Well, then you're not a predator.
Yeah,
you're just a meat consumer.
Then you're going to go walk and you're a lion. As you walk into a Whole Foods, there's going to be like all the African animals in cellophane. And you're going to be like, I'm still a predator, I'm going to eat this shit.
Right.
I'm still a lion, I'm going to eat this. But I don't mind. I've taken off my claws and I'm just going to eat it because somebody put it here for me. Not only am I going to eat it, it's going to be nice lighting on like a wall where it's presented in such a wonderful way. There'll be a sticker that tells me what's in it.
With crushed ice.
Thanks, little sticker, for telling me what's in this.
Yeah.
You're so wonderful. Like, you imagine how ridiculous that would sound to somebody if you presented like our predatory history as a human. Like, to present that we evolved from cavemen throwing spears at things or cavemen going and eating the leftovers or whatever lions killed in 2 million years ago to the same cavemen 2 million years later walking around in a Whole Foods peeling off the stickers of a piece of pork and thinking that's humane and okay.
And it's also, it's kind of a cop-out because people hate it when you say you have to experience it, because until you experience it, you really don't know what we're talking about. But there is such a radical difference between eating a steak that you buy at a store and what that experience is and eating the backstrap of an axis deer that you had to sneak up on, you had to crawl on your hands and knees, you had to wait for this thing to be cresting the ridge for the perfect opportunity to pass in front of the bush where you draw back, your heart is pounding, you're centering your bubble on your rest, your sight, and you're just drawing back and you're just making sure you don't fuck this up, and you see that arrow launch and you see it slam into his rib cage and you're like, fuck, I got him, and you see it run and you see it fall over and its legs kick, and then you cut it up and then you cook it, and while you're eating that thing, you're thinking about what happened. You know how that animal died. You were there. You know, you understand this, you respect it in a way that no one ever respects anything that comes in a ground beef package wrapped in plastic, sitting on styrofoam, laying on crushed ice. It's not the same. It's just not.
There's five people sitting around this table. All of us are accomplished in our own things that we do and work hard at what we do and what we love. We all have families and we all have lives, but we are all eaten up. We are all of us think about this, that moment you just described all the time. It's all almost all I ever think about. It's like,
whenever I'm not doing that, that's what I'm thinking about. Planning on doing it again.
Shane is like that, but maybe worse than some people I've ever seen.
That's why he's so good.
That's so good. But like, how powerful it is for all these people. He's from Hawaii. I'm from Maryland. You're from, give it to me,
Boston. Well, grew up in New Jersey. Born New Jersey. Grew up
in California. We got Iowa. We got South Dakota. Like, all these people from diverse backgrounds live in different places. Find a connection in that same thing. Like, that experience is so powerful that it brings people together from all these crazy things. And when some people say, why do you hunt? I'd be like, that's part of it. There's a myriad of reasons. But that's one of the things. Like, sitting in a room with people that all think the same way about that experience, that's crazy powerful.
I remember listening to a Jim Shockey commercial where Jim Shockey was talking about hunting. And he said, when I'm not hunting, I'm thinking about hunting. I was like, what the fuck is wrong with this dude? Because I had never hunted.
You can't relate.
I couldn't relate. I was like, wow, this is... Because I had watched a bunch of hunting television shows and a bunch of hunting things before I ever got into hunting. And I remember thinking, what I wanted to do was I was so disconnected between meat and the death of an animal. So disconnected. So I was like, well, I need to see it happen, or I need to do it myself. Something, maybe I need to hunt. So I started watching these hunting shows. I would go to Channel 605 on fucking DirecTV. I'm like, what are these freaks up to? Some strange area of the dial or the channels where I never go to. And then I started watching Jim Shockey's show, and then I watched Steve Rinella's The Wild Within.
I remember that.
And I watched Ted Nugent's Spirit of the Wild, and I was like, what is going on? Like, what are these people up to, and I got sort of this like weird desire to try this, and it took forever before I actually finally did it. And when I finally did it, it was with Rinella. But once I finally did it and I shot a mule deer and then we're eating it by the fire, I'm like, oh, I'm doing this forever.
Yeah.
So it was immediate. Well, I was like, I'm doing this forever.
When we first met, me, you, and Sam, well, we shot a moose, and a couple hours later we were in the tiny little house in British Columbia. You were cooking the liver and onions of the moose you just shot, and the heart, the slice out of the heart of the moose you just shot, and we were eating it, and I was just sitting on the table thinking, like, here's a guy who's been through more than I'll ever go through. Here's a guy who's experienced more life than a lot of folks, who's, like, discovered this thing, and not only discovered it, but jumped into the world, into it with both feet, and is eating heart and liver. I mean, I know a lot of hunters that don't want to experience that, you know, or don't open their minds to experience eating organs, or whatever, but you jump into that thing and you say, like, I want all of it. I want every piece of the experience, and I don't want to miss anything. And then once you start to do that, I mean, that's 3 years ago we hunted.
Yeah.
And how much has your mind changed about hunting in those 3 years?
A lot. Well, in those 3 years, I went from being like almost exclusively rifle in the beginning, which is probably a good way to get started because it's more reliable, to like being almost exclusively archery. And one of the things that struck me about it is one of the things that strikes me about a lot of things about this crazy life that we live is that I don't think most people are seeing everything. And I think that we live a life with blinders on. I think one of the reasons why we do that is because life becomes more and more complex the longer we live. We have more and more responsibilities. We have family, and they have more and more responsibilities. We're involved in all these responsibilities. We accumulate debt, and we accumulate all these different tasks that require our attention. And those things chew up a lot of your time on this earth. And somewhere along the line, you forget a lot of things. You forget that you're an organism. You forget that you're an organism that has this unique ability to communicate and share ideas. And because of this unique ability to communicate, we have this... I mean, this is what we're doing right now. We're sharing these ideas, and these ideas resonate with other people, and they elevate the way and expand the way other people look at life. And their words and their ideas expand our concepts of life. And I think that when you stumble across something as intense as hunting, or even as archery, you know, which is, I mean, even without hunting, I've said time and time again, if you're a vegan, you should do archery just the same, for the same reason you should do yoga, for the same reason you should meditate. But I think that when you stumble across something that is a real game changer It's almost like your responsibility. I feel like in a lot of ways what I do with my life is I'm like a little bit ahead in terms of like there's like a path. And I'm a little maybe ahead of where I should be. And I'm like, guys, you got to see this. Come on. It's safe. Yeah. You know, I almost like, I'm like, come on, come on. Dude, I'm telling you. Come on over here. Look at this. And I really feel like that. And I feel like we all do that to a certain extent. And I think some people are very hesitant to do that because they don't want to be Brandon fucked us. Brandon's our friend, but I fucked us. I forgot to put my phone on airplane. Is that I think that hunting, like a lot of things in life, is it's not for everybody, and you don't have to do it. But the experience is so intense that most people who do it feel required to let everyone know that there's something else out there. That the life that we live inside these barriers and this civilization confinements, the walls and the structures of cities and of language and culture, all of those erode when you're on a spot and stalk in Hawaii and you're sneaking up on some deer that just wants to stay alive.
Yeah. No, I mean, and it goes back to your role, like to your role as in humanity, but also in society. Like I feel more accomplished as a human being because I have the ability to shoot an axis deer with a bow. Like I don't think someone that can't do that is less accomplished, but I feel like as a part of my skill set as a human, the skill set of my, you know, my evolution as a person, that has been a tool for me to use to gain perspective. We were talking about some trips that I've been on. Like, there's no way. Like, yeah, maybe there's some photos on social media or some things to denote my accomplishment or like what I killed or what the mountains I climbed or the things I've done. But the perspective you gain that you take home with you that, you know, kind of bleeds out into your work life and your social life and all the things, your interactions with other people, like those things can't be measured. And so there's some level of measurement that you just can't get from hunting. And when we do stuff like this together as a group, like there's just some level of, I go to SHOT Show, go to the biggest hunting trade show where we had that video of us getting drunk and screaming. And I think sometimes people have never been to that show. They don't realize like the people that I see there and that Sam sees there and that Dudley sees there and that you see when you come, and same for Shane. Like, there's like a certain type of hug that you give that person that you've hunted with. Like, there's a bro hug that like has more intensity than somebody who you just know.
Yeah.
Somebody you may have had a drink with or had dinner with sometimes. Like, when I see somebody I've hunted with, like, we roll out. Like, we embrace each other. I think there's like that shared experience. Like, man, I'm finally good to see you. There's a little bit of that energy back in the room from that time we went axis deer hunting.
Yeah.
So that, I would say that's proof that hunting connects people as much as it does anything else. Like, it connects us as people.
Yeah, and there's some people that want it to go away. You know, there's some people that want meat eating entirely to go away, and they don't want animals to be consumed. But I feel like where we are right now, I mean, I understand this longing for some utopian existence where nothing has to suffer and nothing has to die. But that's not currently available. It's not currently available in the wild world. It's not currently available in the human world. And I think we as a species should do the best that we can to be nice to each other. But we should also understand that these animals, they do not have the capacity to understand. They do not have the capacity for reason, for calculation, for coordination of resources. These things don't exist. And Lanai is one of the best examples of that. It's infested with deer. It's great for someone who wants to come on in here and be a bow hunter. It would be terrible if you were a plant.
Yep. And or a manager.
If you were a plant deer eating, you'd be like, what the fuck?
There's so many deer. 18,000
deer eating me.
I mean, they had to kill off all the goats because they brought so many goats on this island. The goats ate all the vegetation to the point where there was no more rainfall.
Yep.
Stop and think about that shit. They ate everything. It was a fucking desert. The people that lived here, like, hey man, we gotta kill these goddamn goats so the water comes back. You know, and you can't just like kumbaya them and, hey guys, you gotta eat only your fair share of lettuce. It doesn't really work that way.
Well, that's what you said. Like, I'm no wildlife management expert, but there is like these islands like this, you know, coming from New Zealand last month and coming to this island of Lanai, you just realize what happens in a closed ecosystem, like a place where there is no opportunity for things to move on. I mean, there just is no opportunity for, and biodiversity is like one of the most important things that you could have here. So when you have one or two species dominating the landscape, that's trouble.
Yeah.
And that is trouble. And so what do you do at that point? You can't, like you said, you can't snuggle these deer off this island. You kill them.
You bring a shitload of arrows.
Yeah, you bring a shitload of arrows. Yeah. 50 well, arrows.
Wildlife biologists.
And a big old Yeti cooler.
Wildlife biologists and, well, the Department of Wildlife in California has done a very interesting thing, and it's very controversial. But what they've done is they've outlawed hunting predators. You can't hunt mountain lions. So because of that, there's very few deer. And because of that, you really don't have to worry about deer accidents. Yeah. You know, deer and car accidents kill, I think it's 150 people a year, and there's, I think it's actually 200 people a year and 1.5 million accidents. I think it's
that sounds about right.
I think it's about that, somewhere around there, which is insane. And John, where you live, I mean, you're the perfect person to talk to about that. When I came to your place, dude, we were there during the rut, and we saw deer bouncing in front of the road left and right. Mm-hmm. We saw dead deer on the side of the road left and right. Yeah. I mean, people are constantly smashing into them, right?
Oh, yeah. We did that on the podcast with you. It says an estimated of 1.23 million deer vehicle collisions occurred in the U.S. between July 1, 2011 and June 30th, 2012. Costing more than $4 million in vehicle damage.
$4 billion.
$4 billion in vehicle damage, according to State Farm.
I'd be like, damn, that's a cheap accident.
Wesley Walls.
1.5 million car accidents only cost $4 million. This is amazing. What kind of cars are we making?
It's $1
America.
It's not an 80s or 90s.
Goddamn tanks driving around.
They're all driving Toyota Land Cruisers.
Knocking these faggot deer off the road.
Okay, cat lady.
Wow, that's incredible. $4 billion a year. 200 deaths and $4 billion a year.
200 deaths.
That is truly incredible. But that's an imbalanced ecosystem. That's too many deer. I mean, it's great if you want to live in Iowa like John Dudley and whack them and stack them. Yeah, for sure. But, I mean, unless aliens come down in spaceships and start fucking setting up blinds.
Why would aliens come to Earth?
I would not.
Flat Earth.
Why would they come to a flat Earth? The same reason why we come to Lanai.
So they can do heads or tails?
Aliens
just
have...
It's hard to get here, but it's a target-rich environment.
They have nuclear slingshots, and they like to take us out from the fucking skies.
Oh, my God.
They like hide behind clouds.
Cat lady's getting deep.
Yeah. We just got to get really good at like bobbing and weaving. Yeah. And the dudes who have good head movement are going
to
live.
You hear a sound? Drop the jump straight.
Yes. I'll come to whatever feeder they set up if it's like.
What if it's like an In-N-Out Burger feeder? Like, damn.
If it's like an Axis deer.
Can you imagine all these years?
I never thought of that.
Yeah.
Aliens made In-N-Out Burger.
Imagine.
It would be delicious.
Imagine if they start looking into In-N-Out Burger, they're like, there's no one who formed this corporation. Like we've gone only, deep into the
they're the only person that doesn't have a bun. So all like paleo people are going there?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah
all
yeah.
The in shape, actually physically superior people are
they
going
figured
there.
Out how to attack the rutting elk.
Yeah. Oh damn it.
The rutting bull elk. Of the humans.
Why are those big truck cans by the Whole Foods?
What's that thing on the light post? Nothing. What are your burger, pussy? Yeah.
Nah, we're like, shit, man. All humans do is consume. We just wake up in the morning and consume.
And produce. Yeah, I mean, we could look at the negative side all day, but we're the reasons why there's irrigation and cell phones and satellite dishes.
Yeah, man.
There's good out. And bad. And that big-ass TV. Look at that big-ass TV. That wasn't made by squirrels.
That's true. I argue with vegans all the time that hunters are trying to do the same thing as them. Like, we're trying to control our consumption, same as you.
I think vegans mean well.
They
I really
do. Well.
I think most of them mean well. And I think most of them look at us the same way a lot of people look at a lot of things that they're ignorant to you know, and they cast these judgments on it. And it's not because they're bad people. It's because they just don't understand the full complexity of all the variables that are involved in this equation that is life.
Yeah. Emotional attachment to their worldview. Like, veganism is part of their emotional view of the world. Oh, oh, the mini bar's empty.
Yes. I opened that beer with a fucking custom knock-on knife, ladies and gentlemen.
HMC.
All right, before I get yelled at by my kids, I got to wrap this bitch up. It's 3:09 here.
Yeah, perfect timing. Our friends are picking us up to go hunting right now, too.
Yeah, that's probably why Brandon was calling us. Yeah, it's 3:09.
3:09. Okay. Yeah. You're getting picked up.
Well, so,
everyone...
Hey, ladies and gentlemen,
you were at the 2005 Arnold Classic.
Ah! Come on, man! I know you Google.
Sims knockout take out.
No, no, Wes Sims. Wes Sims.
Wes Sims.
Wes Sims.
With the knee to the face in the second round, please somehow.
All right.
Well, I think we realized that the perfect arrow is an Adele song. Oh, my phone died. Put on Adele. Hello.
I think we realized that. We realized that Sam's vision for creating this hunting bus is a beautiful thing. We realized that Shane Dorian is addicted to bow hunting.
We did.
We realized that Yeti coolers are the greatest coolers on the planet Earth.
We realized that we're coming back to Lanai every year.
We're not telling you when, though, you fucking weirdos. Don't go stalking us.
Don't please.
Yeah. That's it. Live from Lanai. Thank you very much for tuning in, ladies and gentlemen. Please check out Knock On Podcast if you're into archery.
Knock On TV.
But wait. Knock On Podcast. Yeah. What's your podcast?
I thought you were doing
damn, you're drunk.
Check out
Cat Ladies.
Check out my new Instagram at Wesley Walls, Arnold Classic.
Wesley Walls will be trolling the Knock On social media feed.
Wesley Walls was a tight end for the Panthers.
Sam Soholt, you can check out the build. It's all live on Instagram. It's on your Instagram story on Instagram as well?
I'll do both.
Both.
Yeah.
Yeah, both.
Both.
Shane Dorian, one of the baddest motherfuckers on the planet Earth. Respect. John Dudley, you're the man, even though you're wrong about that Arnold Classic bullshit.
Can't wait to prove
you. Ah, you definitely won't.
I was there.
Wait. You're going to starve to death before it happens. All right, folks.
Can't
that's it.
The first.
Coming at you live from paradise. Respect. Big kiss. Woo! Mwah.